You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
A bunch of stuff to cheer myself up. I thought if I was a little smarter, maybe that would make me happy. I tried doing all the fun things I like to do. Maybe that will make me happy. I thought maybe if I worked harder, then I'd be happy. I thought maybe if I was in first place, then that would make me happy. So I worked really hard and got lots of money, but that didn't make me happy either. Finally, after trying all these things, I realized that Jesus is the only thing that's gonna make me happy. And without Jesus, life stinks.
Well, we're having some computer issues apparently, so just go ahead to the next thing there. Anyway, we're going through a series called Life Stinks, and it's about the book of Ecclesiastes. And in this book, it's written by a guy named Solomon, who was the wisest man that ever lived. He was king over all of Israel and considered to be the richest king, the richest person in the land. And so he's at the end of his life kind of looking back, and he writes this book, and we've been looking for the last 6 weeks and for the next few, at the fact that all of these things that he'd been pursuing to make him happy, as the video was trying to communicate, all these things he's been pursuing to make him happy didn't make him happy. That he tried different things. And we've looked at knowledge. And he said, I tried to, you know, I pursued wisdom and made that the end. And he says, you know what, but knowledge stinks. And he says, I pursued wealth and trying to get a lot of stuff. And you know what, when it came down to it, that didn't matter. And he talked about, what other things did he look at? We looked at he pursued just being the greatest, and that didn't make him happy. And all these different things really did not satisfy him. And so we're continuing on this week, and we're going to be looking in Ecclesiastes, and we'll get to that passage in a second. But before we do, I want to tell you a little bit about a story that happened about 3.5 years ago. We had we found out unexpectedly that we were having our fourth child. And so we were kind of looking at our house, and if you've been to our house, it's not really very big. And we decided, you know, we really need a little bit more room for the kids. And there was some attic space in the back. And anyway, through lots of discussion, we finally decided we're going to expand the upstairs and the attic space we're going to turn into just more space for the kids' bedrooms so that we can have a boys' room and a girls' room. And so we had this project. We hired a contractor to come in and do all the framing. And in the process, one of the things that we realized is that to raise the roof on the back of our house like they were planning to do, there were a bunch of wires in the way. One of those was a power line from Penelec, so they had to come out and move that. And another one was a power line that went from the back of our house to our garage, which is a separate garage behind our house, and it provided the power for the garage. So, all that to set up in the story. When this happened, they had to remove these lines. Again, Penelec had to move the one, and then the electrician for our contractor came and took the wire down, and it was just kind of laying on the ground. And you know, looking at that, we looked up from our backyard and realized, wow, look at the sky. Like, there aren't wires crisscrossing everywhere. So I had this idea that instead of having this wire go above, why not dig a trench and run the wire underground to our garage. And I did some research, and I'm cheap, and I found out that I could save like 6 cents by going with what's called UF cable, underground feeder, which means you can just dig it, and you don't have to put conduit there. If I spent the extra 6 cents, and seriously, it was not that much in looking back, but with that, or you can do conduit, which you just run wire through conduit, and the conduit protects it. The thing about UF cable versus conduit is that you have to dig. UF cable has to be down, and I don't even remember at this point. I think it was something like 21 inches. It has to be that far in the ground so that nobody accidentally digs and pokes into the wire. With conduit, because it's protecting it, it doesn't have to be as deep. Anyway, so, brilliant plan. Let's dig this ditch from the back of our house to our garage so that, and again, saving that 6 cents, now suddenly I have to go a whole lot deeper than I was originally thinking. And so I'm out there digging, and I'll tell you what, I had a pick, I had shovels, and I was working hard. And of course, like, I got down about this far and then hit shale. and there's shale everywhere, which is rock, a kind of rock, and I'm digging into that. And I'm like, I can't handle this, so I had my pregnant wife come out and do the work. And seriously, we got some great pictures of this big old belly, and then her down there, like, with sweat. I mean, it's summer, it's August, and we're digging this trench, and we eventually, I mean, we even had neighbors come over and help, and it was not very far, I'm telling you, like, I don't even think it's as far as, like, for me to Bill back there, to that back door, like, it was not that far, but to get down, we're just digging, and it took days to dig this thing, and it occurred to us, too, that if I had gone with conduit, I wouldn't have had to go as deep. But if I had rented a tool, like, what do they call it, a ditch witch or something, they could dig it, probably could have done it in like 5 minutes. But, so we were digging this thing, and it was hard. And we finally, like, I don't know if there's any official electrical inspectors here, but we technically didn't quite reach the full depth. So if you happen to hang out in my yard, don't go digging for buried treasure. But we put this thing in, and it was funny, I was looking at how hard we worked and how much time we put into that. And then underneath my garage, right along the wall of my garage, there's a trench about 6 inches deep that's running right parallel with our garage. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, man, and look down, and I couldn't figure out why this trench was there, like, is it animals burrowing? And I came to realize, I mean, we're talking like rocks, pieces of shale are moved out of the way, like, it is a trench, and it's about 6 inches, like I said, and there's concrete that was there for our footer for our garage, and that even has a line going through it. So what is this? And I realized, it didn't take a genius, but we don't have a gutter in our garage. And so what was happening is when it rained, all the water would just start to drip off of our garage, and it dripped down and made this trench. So we worked for days with tools, and water, drops of water, did about 6 inches and went through the rock, made the trench that we needed, and it was all it took was just a few drips and drops here and there. And of course, if you know anything about water, you know that water can erode rock. I mean, it can do some serious things. But water, all it takes is just a little drip. A little drip over and over and over, a drip here, a drip there, and suddenly there's a trench, there is a pit, there is a hole there. And I want to look at, as we look at Ecclesiastes today, I want to look at the little drips in our lives. Because a lot of times there's these little things that aren't big, they aren't major, they're not power tools coming into our lives, but they're little drips that start to eat away at the foundation of our lives. Little things that we don't notice, they're insignificant at the time, and after a while, these drips create a hole. There's a pit there, there's something, and we find that we're in that hole and we can't dig out and we don't even know what happened. And so I want to talk about that this morning, and this is the point that I want to look at as we talk about success and success stinks and this idea of integrity, that true success is not measured by where you are, but, there we go, but by how you get there. True success is not measured by where you are, but by how you get there. And I need to give a shout out because we do have Scott Fillon, and I trained him about 60 seconds ago on how to run the whole program because I think our tech guy forgot to set his clock. But anyway, so true success is not measured by where you are. We identify success as, wow, I've reached this point. I've gotten to the top. I'm here. Now I'm successful. And as we look here in Ecclesiastes, we're going to discover that true success isn't about where you are. It's how you get there. It's what's going on in the little things in your life. It's the little drips that take you to that point. So if you have your Bibles, go ahead and open to Ecclesiastes. And we're in chapter 4 now. We're jumping a little bit. If we went verse by verse, we would be here till like 2013. So we're going to skip a little bit. We were going verse by verse for the first couple chapters. But we're going to Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 13. And this is what Solomon says. He says, "Better a poor but wise youth than an old but foolish king who no longer knows how to take warning. The youth may come from prison to the kingship, or he may have been born into poverty within his kingdom. I saw that all who lived and walked under the sun followed the youth, the king's successor. There was no end to all the people who were before them, but those who came later were not pleased with the successor. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind." So just to back up a little bit, the end of the passage, he talks about how this is meaningless, and we've talked every week. Anybody know the Hebrew word for meaningless at this point? Hebel. Hebel means meaningless, empty, vanity. It's a vapor. It's nothing. There is nothing to it, and that's what he's saying, that this is meaningless. This idea of success is empty. There is nothing to it. It's just a chasing after the wind. You know, that's a great phrase, that you can't catch the wind. You can work hard, and it's empty. So I want to talk about what exactly is he? I mean, this is kind of a strange passage. And as I was studying it, it turns out that I'm not the only one that thinks it's kind of a strange passage, because Hebrew people study Hebrew Bible grammaticians, theologians, have studied this, and it's hard to figure out what exactly the original language means, because it's a pronoun problem. There's a lot of pronouns in here, and that makes it kind of hard to understand. It'd be like me standing in front of you right now and saying, "You, go to that place and get that thing." Who's the you? Who am I talking to? What place am I referring to? Oh, and Eric goes, and he comes back. That's what I was looking for. Go to that place and get that thing. It's very vague pronouns, and so that's the way this passage was written. There's a lot of things that are vague, but there's some things that we can draw out here, and I want to look at it with this idea of success and how you get there, and these little drips, and the idea of integrity. And there's some things that basically Solomon points out. First of all, he starts in verse 13, and he talks about the successful, the one who, in the eyes of everybody, is a success. The successful was the king. The king was the one. I mean, come on. It's the king. It's good to be the king, right? Anybody remember that? Okay. It's good to be the king. He was at the top. He was the one in charge of all the land. He had all the riches. And we looked a few weeks ago at the idea of pursuing pleasures. And he had every pleasure known to man. And he's saying, you know what? The king was at the top. But he says, it is better to be a poor but wise youth than an old but foolish king who no longer knows how to take warning. He says that man, the king, everybody looks and says, oh, I wish I was the king. And, you know, we do that today with our own. Oh, if only I had gotten to that level. You know, if I was the manager of my company, and then things would be good. Or we look, oh, if I was the president of this country, I would know how to run. If I was the lead pastor of MC3, then I would make things right. And so we get to look and we say, man, if only I got to that position. And Solomon's saying, you know what? It looks good, but there's a problem here, because this guy, he's old. And that doesn't mean he's old, like he's anti-old people, but he's saying that this guy has been a king. If you're an old king, that's good. That means someone didn't kill you and take your throne. And so he is an old king. He's been there for a long time. And he says, what's happening here is that this successful guy has suddenly lost his way. And maybe, let me back up. He hasn't suddenly lost his way. He has slowly lost his way to the point where he is no longer able to take warning. And the Hebrew root here is this idea of just listening to advice. If somebody says, hey, buddy, you better do this, he's like, no, I don't need that. I am the king. I'm the one in charge. And so he is the most successful person in the land. It all looks good from the top. But then he goes on and talks about the successor, that the person that was following the king here, that's what a successor means, someone that follows in the success of the king, follows in the place of the king. He says that this guy, he says there's this guy that's coming up, this youth, those young people, them teenagers. He says the youth may have come from prison to the kingship, or may have been born in poverty within his kingdom. So he says that this guy, he says you could be the king, the most successful person in the land, the one that is in control, the one that is at the top of the game, the manager, the head honcho, the big cheese, the boss, the Mac Daddy, the leader. He says, that looks good, but he said it's better to be a poor youngin', to be a poor guy that knows nothing. He says, and this poor youth, man, he could have come from prison. It's better to be someone that's an ex-convict coming out of prison, who was poor, or maybe he came from, he'd been born in poverty. It's better to be born in poverty and to still have some wisdom than to be someone that is successful at the top and no longer willing to take advice, no longer willing to follow the advice that other people give. And so this idea of success, we look at it and say, man, oh, if only, and that's usually the phrase with success, if only I got there, if only I had that promotion, if only this thing worked out that my way. And Solomon is saying, and I think he's writing about himself. He's the king. He's old when he's writing this. And he's saying, you know what? It's better to be a nobody kid, a nobody snot-nosed brat that at least still has a head on his shoulders, than someone that is successful and has lost their integrity in the process. That someone that is slowly dripping, dripping, dripping away and is no longer following the things that they should be following, because they're the success, they're the king, they're the top. And so he said, it's better than that. And the third thing, then he goes on and says, look, everybody's following this young guy. That everybody's following him. That this new guy comes up, the guy is the king, but everybody's following the young guy. And he says, that's great. You know, everybody's following him and they're going along. And the king thought he had it under control, but apparently he doesn't because everybody's following this new young wise guy. And then he says, this guy, he grows up and there was no end to all the people that came before him. But then he says, those who came later were not pleased with the new guy. And so they followed someone else. And so he's saying here, again, that it's meaningless. It's chabel. It's a chasing after the wind. He says, you know what? Even this young guy, he's looking and saying, man, the old guy, he doesn't care. He doesn't listen to advice anymore. The young guy comes up. He was poor, but he's wise. And he says, but, you know, a time's coming when people are going to be like, I don't want that guy either. And he's saying that success stinks. That getting to the top is not the answer. He's saying that being the most important person, being at the top of your game is not the thing. He basically says that true success is not measured by where you are, but how you get there. And so when we look at our lives, when we compare and say, okay, you know, Solomon, man, he's the king. He's the one. He's the top. He's the boss. There's nobody. And he snapped his fingers and it's done. He can get anything he wants. He can get his way. And he's saying, you know what? I've been there. And it's just empty. It's meaningless. It's a chasing after the wind. It's a vapor. And so he's looking at this idea and he says that, you know what? True success is not measured by where you are, but how you get there. And so here's just some thoughts that I have. We're on slide 6 now. And somebody just texted me again. Gotta love that. Last time it was an elder. I'm not going to say which elder it was that texted me while I was teaching last week. And we know it wasn't Kurt because he doesn't know how to do that. Anyway, so when it comes to success, here's just some, these are not biblical. I just want to share kind of my impressions, my observation of what it comes down to when it comes to success. When we get to that point where we feel successful, we have this problem because we feel we need to maintain it. We need to maintain success and we need to hold on to it. And that's what Solomon's saying is that when you get to that point when you're a success, you keep pursuing this thing and suddenly you feel like you've got to maintain that success. You've got to keep it. Which one assumes that it's you that got you there in the first place when reality is that if you're successful in something, if you've gotten to that point, it's because God did something in your life. God is using you in some way. So don't even think that it's your own call, but that's extra. So the first thing it requires is it requires a tight grip. In my experience and just studies and looking even at scripture, that when people become a success, they feel, whether it's major success like they're at the top or even just little steps, they feel like they need to have a tight grip. They need to control the situation. That we need to, well, I'm in charge, so it's mine. I've earned this. I have gotten my way. And we have a great phrase for that, and we are in America in 2012, and the word is entitlement. Entitlement. I deserve this. And I came up with this, I don't know if this is right, but I just came up with this idea. Like, entitlement is giving society the bill for our expenses. That I'm doing this, well, it's because you owe me. And I've done this thing, and I've earned it, and I deserve it. And that's what happens. When we get successful, we seem to get more and more entitled. And I'm not, and listen to me. If you're thinking that I'm talking about your job, that's this much of what I'm talking about this morning. But we are successful in so many ways, and we think we've earned it. We think we're entitled to it. We think that people owe us that. Just this past week, that project that I started 3.5 years ago, We finished the drywall, did the bathroom, all this stuff up there. We never put flooring down on the subfloor. And the kids have these planks these are my kids' rooms, that are like this wide in between them. They can't play with Lego up there. And there's this one spot, if you got a flashlight, you would see like every Polly Pocket in the world is in this crack down there. And so we had been promising literally for years, like, guys, we're gonna get carpeting for you guys. We're gonna get flooring for you. And we've gone to Lowe's 3 times and priced the whole thing and got it all ready to sign and we're like, we just can't afford that. We just can't afford that. And so finally, since I'm making so much money now, the government feels that I'm entitled to more. So we had a tax return and we were finally able to back up the promise we made to our kids. We get carpeting. Well, in the process, this has been a room that's been lived in for 3 years. And so there's furniture everywhere. We have 4 kids. That's a lot of furniture. That's a lot of beds. That's a lot of stuff. And so we had to clear everything out. And what we ended up doing is the really heavy stuff, we moved into the upstairs bathroom. And let me tell you how much I hated that. Because for 2 days, we had to live with one bathroom. Can you believe that? I mean, I'm an American. I deserve to have two bathrooms in my house. My kids had to use my bathroom. And it's so funny because Kendra and I, we weren't even thinking spiritual or anything deep, like, oh, he's a pastor. It was just like this, man, why don't we, and then we kind of caught ourselves, like, are we really complaining that we have only one bathroom for 2 days that we have to live with? We have indoor plumbing and running water. We can put our toilet paper in the toilet, not in the can next to it if you're in other countries. Somebody's been there with me, right? And I'm complaining about that. And that's this idea of this tight grip. We feel like, man, I've earned this. I deserve this. This is mine. I did it. And so we start to control the situation and we lose all sorts of things. We lose our relationship with Christ and we lose our relationship with other people because we're trying to control it. The second thing that I've seen is that it requires the status quo. Things can't change. If we're a success, we don't want anything to change. And we're kind of balancing this, like, nope, nothing should change. Nothing should be different. And when that happens, eventually, if you don't change, you're not growing, okay? And if you're not growing, you're dying. If you have a plant and it is no longer growing, the other alternative is that it's dying. And so we get caught up in this, we got to keep everything the same, we don't change. And we get to this point where it's like we don't change anything. We realize that change is probably what got us to that point in the first place. But we are successful, and so we don't want to change anything. We want to keep everything the same, status quo. And we don't realize in the process we're dying. And this is one thing that scares me for MC3. I mean, we're obviously doing some things cutting edge. We're doing some things different. We're in a black garage, you know. And we've got, our kids are learning the same thing the adults are, and then you have small groups, and that's what we're built around, and there's all this stuff, and we're really kind of cutting edge. We're a little bit different, especially for Mifflin County. But you know what? If we sit back and say, this is what makes us successful, and if in 2 years we look exactly the way we do now, then we're not successful. we're going to become an obsolete whatever, and you know, you could look at story after story of companies, of people that refuse to change, and because of that, it led to their demise. And so that's another thing I see when it comes to success, is we maintain the status quo. And the last thing that I see, and this again, just my observation, is that when it comes to success, when people get successful, there's a lot of beatdowns that need to happen. Because people are going to try to take your success from you, and you need to beat them away. Whether that's physically, it's kind of awful, but I guess it happens. I mean, that's what a dictator is. That's why you go and exterminate a whole group of people, because they're getting in your way of what you want to accomplish. And so we beat down and we throw people under the bus. And I always wonder why it's a bus. I guess because buses are bigger and they hurt more. But we get to this point where we need to hurt people. We take out anyone who gets in our way. We have no problem insulting, down-talking, or gossiping to make us look better. And again, I'm not just talking about work. I'm talking about our lives. Like, we want to look successful. So we say things to make other people, if people don't look as successful, if they're lesser than we are, then therefore we must be greater. So we use our words to do that. And we beat them down. And we use phrases, I think I've shared this before, we use phrases like them or those people. And then by saying them or those people, suddenly we're better because they're not one of them. We're not one of those people. And it's not what Christ has called us. We're all created in the image of God. We're going to do a series April, called I, God. And we're going to look at the attributes of God and how amazing he is. And man, how much that must grieve his heart to say, I created these people that you're calling them, that you're calling lesser. And we use our words to talk down. And again, it comes back to this entitlement. I'm an American. I deserve this. Let me get completely real with you, and Kendra's probably going to be a little upset that I'm sharing this. We, right now, because of our income, we're on food stamps. That right now, the government is providing food for our kids, and without it right now, we couldn't afford it. I'll be straight up with you. The salary that we make, which God has been blessing us incredibly, but that's where we are. And I'll tell you what, I watch online the comments from people. They're like, those people on food stamps, I saw them. They went in, and they got hamburger. Like, yeah, you're right, because you don't eat. And they got chips. Well, I eat chips. Do you not eat chips? And there's these constant things that are being thrown out there about those people. And I'm one of those people. And that kind of offends me a little bit. And we don't realize that our words, you know, by saying that, oh, you're superior because you're not on food stamps. Okay, if that's what you think, that's fine. I'd be willing to bet that I probably put more hours into my work week than you do, but I'm not going to go there. But I'm just saying, we use these things and we talk about those people and them, and we beat down other people just to maintain the image of our success. And again, these are these little drips that are dripping. Oh, it's not that big deal. I'm not hurting anybody specifically when I talk about them. Well, actually you are, and it is a big deal, these little things. The other thing we do is blame people, you know? We blame. Whose fault is it? It's not my fault. So whose fault is it? It's the government's fault. It's my parents' fault for raising me the way they did. It's because I'm poor. You know, if I wasn't in this situation, I would be able to, you know, not do these things. I'm a middle child. That's my problem. You know, I had an older child, younger child, middle child. Sorry, I'm stuck with my lot in life. That's what happened. Sorry. It's God's fault. It's God's fault that I'm this way. He made me this way. And we start to blame other people. And this whole entitlement, this package says, I'm successful. I deserve it. And so therefore, I'm going to maintain this tight grip. I'm going to keep things the same. And I'm going to beat down anybody that gets in my way. And Solomon is saying, it's meaningless. It is empty. There's nothing to all that. He says, because I watched. And as I was king in my old years, I was the top. Some young punk. We didn't know anything, came from nowhere, but at least he was willing to do the right thing. He was willing to listen to instruction. He was able to listen to wisdom. And he didn't sacrifice his integrity. He said, that person is successful, not me. And so that's what Solomon said. Jesus said the same thing. And this is how Jesus put it. He said, what good will it be for someone to gain the whole world? Yeah, it's coming up there. For someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul. Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? He says, what good is it? You could get to the top. You could be somebody. You could have the best house in your neighborhood. You could have the most well-behaved children. You could have that job that everybody else wants to have. You could be the starter for your team. But he says, what good is it to gain the whole world, to be the top, and yet forfeit and lose your own soul? And that's exactly what Solomon was saying. You know what? I saw someone that was wise, but he was young, poor, but at least he was wise, and he was willing to stay true to the things that mattered. And he says, but I'm an old king, and I'm not willing to listen to anybody anymore. I'm not willing to do things the right way. I'm willing to do what needs to be done to maintain my success. And Jesus says, man, what good is it? You can get everything, and you can. You can gain everything in this world and completely lose what really matters, completely lose your own soul. So my question is for us as we think about this idea, and again, please don't misunderstand that we're talking about your job, just success. There's so many areas in our lives where we try to achieve success. But he says this, you know, so what does it look like? When he says lose our soul, what does that look like? You guys may have heard of a ship once called the Titanic. It was a very large ship. I was doing some study on it, and it was actually bigger than the aircraft carriers during its time. Than a World War II aircraft carrier. The Titanic was bigger than a World War II aircraft carrier. That's a lot of mouthful to say there. Three jumbo jets would probably be about the same size as the Titanic. It is a big ship. And so when Jesus is talking about losing your soul, what's he talking about here? Well, this big ship, there have been studies done. Of course, we all know what hit an iceberg. The ship wasn't supposed to sink. What it came down to were the rivets. And I don't know how big a rivet was back then. Let's just be generous and say it was like a 6-inch rivet. That the rivets were not made to the standard that they should have been. And so when it hit this iceberg, those rivets just completely broke and opened the side of the hull, allowing water to go in, and then the rest is history. But that little rivet, that little thing, these little things, and I don't know, maybe they're smaller than that. Somebody maybe knows what a rivet is. I don't know. It's not a frog. I know that. That's a ribbit. But anyway, these little things took down the whole Titanic. The unsinkable ship sunk because of a little detail. And the same thing happens to us. When it comes to success, we are willing to gain success, to gain the whole world, and forfeit our soul. And it usually comes from little things. Little things we do here and there. So when it comes to this idea of losing our soul, what does that look like? I kind of categorize it a little bit. The first thing is working. What we do, some of the things that we do are an excellent way for us to lose our soul. An excellent way for us to achieve success, but miss the little rivets, miss the little drips that start to eat away at our foundation. And some of the things, I mean, again, this is just some things I'm thinking of. It's really to jog your memory, because I don't know your situation. I don't know what's going on in your life. I don't know what your integrity looks like. I mean, one of the definitions of integrity is actually what you do when no one's looking. So obviously, I can't see what you're doing. So this idea of integrity. So an example of things that we do. One would be at work, perhaps. We fudge the time card to make it look like we're on time. A couple minutes late. What's a minute or two, right? So 10 o'clock. I was there. Not that big of a deal, right? Just a minute or two. Nobody's concerned about that. Drip. Just a little thing. Dave Ramsey, in one of his books, talks about, he says, if you work for someone else and you goof off, that's stealing. Drip. It's a lack of honesty. He says, if you take a sick day, I'm going to get personal here, and you're not sick, that's stealing. Drip. If you say bad things about your manager to someone other than your manager, you're stealing because you are stealing his ability to lead. Cutting productivity, and worst of all, you've just become another boring gossip. Drip. What about stealing music? I mean, it's only 99 cents, right? Or 89 if you go to Amazon. What's the big deal? It's only one song. I mean, they're rich, right? They're touring the country. They're touring the world. It's my right to their music. Drip. And slowly we do these things. How about, come on, let's get real practical here. Going to McDonald's, they have all those ketchup packets. We need ketchup for the rest of the week, right? Let's do it. Napkins, come on. Hey, do you work at Domino's, Sean? No. Just use them to keep my hands clean. And these little things, drip, coffee creamers, come on, take them. The church is leaving them here, just take them. And we drip and drip. And they're little things. Do you understand that? That's what I want you to understand, is that they're little. And we look and say, that's not a big deal. But those little things become big deals. Because if I'm willing to say, cheat my time card, how far is it before I'm willing to cheat on my wife? And usually it's not like, oh, cheat my time card. Okay, today I'm going to cheat. It's little drip, 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 drip things where we think I'm achieving success, but I'm getting to the point where I'm not willing to listen to advice. I'm not willing to learn. Again, I'm going to get practical here. What about speeding? So it's okay to break the law as long as you're not caught. And that's the way we rationalize speeding. Well, they didn't catch me, so I'm okay. So if I kill you, but they don't catch me, it's okay? Drip, drip. And then, you know, the funny thing is that when we do get caught, it's the cop's fault anyway. What was he doing there? How come my radar detector didn't work? Drip, drip. Other things we do. I mean, in church world, one of the things is gimmicky stuff. What can we do to bring people in? Ooh, let's have lights. Oh, okay. You know, if that brings more people in, and I'm not saying that lights are bad, or let's paint our garage, let's move into a garage, you know. But there's things that we can do in churches, and the only reason we do them is not because we have a philosophy or a passion behind them, but because we know if we do that, it'll bring people in. And if we're getting stuck on gimmick and losing our soul as a church, then we've missed it. And then suddenly, drip, drip, our foundation is eroding away with little things here and there. And most people would say, well, that's not wrong. You need to do what you need to do to get people in. You need to pay the bills, right? I think church is more than that. And I know that that's part of it, and I know the finance seems like, okay, yes, it is. but you know, there's more to it than getting people in and getting big numbers and all of that. I mean, and those are the things that we do, and they're little drips here and there, and they're eroding our integrity. They're little rivets that are going to sink the Titanic because we're not willing to address them, and suddenly we've got major problems. The second thing we do is our wording, what we say. A lot of times the things that we say are just little things that we don't think about but they affect our integrity. They affect who we are. We lie to save a buck. We will say things to people that we know are lies because it'll save us money. Let me give you a case in point. When we were paying for our carpet it was a week ago today. It was Sunday, right after church. This is what your pastor did. We went to Lowe's. And we paid for the carpet. On our way out, there was a table right inside the doorway there with a nice lady and a little girl dressed in her little uniform because the Girl Scouts were selling cookies. And I walked up, and this part was genuine. I'm like, ooh, Girl Scout cookies. Is it that time of year again? And she said, yes. And I said, oh, I don't have any money that now, which I didn't. All that was true at that point. And then she said, well, we'll be here all afternoon. You could come back. And I said, I think I might do that. I'll come back. These are good cookies. You guys are doing a good job. All right, I'll be back and get them. I had no intention of coming back. I lied. The great part was that my 9-year-old daughter was with me. And she's watching me. And she's saying, okay, daddy's not coming back. We have people coming over. He's not going back. What? He's lying? And so my little girl is saying, okay, I guess it's okay to lie. And so we actually had a talk a couple days ago, and it was kind of awkward, weird. But I said, Cara, you remember that time when we were at Lowe's and I told that lady that I was coming back? We both know I wasn't coming back. That was wrong. I lied to her. And yet we say things all the time. We're like, it's not that big of a deal, Sean. Drip, drip, eroding at the foundation, eking away what's going on. You know, how about stretching the truth, telling fish stories? This is hard for me, too. I mean, I'd love to wow you with awesome stories of my complete awesomeness. Yeah, that trench, actually, it wasn't 21 inches deep. It was 73 feet deep, and I did it with my knuckles. You know, like, but we say little things. We tell little fish stories. We exaggerate the truth. And sometimes, obviously, it's for fun and comedic. But even still, is it a little drip? We're willing to exaggerate that. And then when it comes to, say, exaggerating things about our income taxes, it's a little drip. And then we exaggerate other things, and before we know it, it's somebody else's fault. We're blaming somebody for a major catastrophe in our life. We're getting fired from work for stealing money from the register, and we say, oh, well, it wasn't that big of a deal until it becomes a big deal. It's a drip, a drip, a drip that works away at our foundation. How about online? What does your profile picture look like? And I'm not saying, you know, that you have to make it this way, but you know, are you Superman with your head superimposed over it? Is that who you project to the world that you are? Maybe Wonder Woman? Hopefully appropriately with the right, anyway. But even little things. You know, are we telling people online, is our status about how amazing we are? Is it telling people, oh, wow, today, man, I preached a sermon at church and 7,000 people came to Jesus. There was crying everywhere. It was amazing. Or maybe I don't say that. Maybe I say, oh, man, there are people crying everywhere. Turned out there was a pollen leak into the room and everybody's allergies or somebody's tear gas went off. You know, like, and we take the truth and we use our words and we exaggerate, we stretch it, we change who we are, and we think it's not that big of a deal. And maybe we say, come on, what harm does it do? But it's a little drip. It's a little drip. And suddenly we're telling people things that are not true about us at all. We lie about who we are, and we don't have a problem doing it because it started with something simple. So the words we say, our wording, what we say is little drips. And then, again, this is going to get a little personal, but our watching. The things that we view. We watch things on TV that if God was with us, which he is, we'll talk about that in April, we would say, what are you doing? He would say that. I mean, it would just be, and we call it entertainment. It's okay. Oh, I know that they're sleeping around with like 15 people, but it's funny, so it's all right. I know that, man, this show is all about the murderers, and man, that murder, he was so cool. Would that be cool if it was real life? And we call these things entertainment. We hear the language, we hear the talk, and man, it is hard to find a good sitcom anymore because of all these things. And it's not that big of a deal. It's only a TV show. They're just actors. It doesn't really matter. Meanwhile, there's these little drips. And we start to believe these things too. We start thinking things like, oh, that's not that big of a deal. I mean, they're having affairs with all their desperate housewives, and it's okay, right? And then eventually, we start to justify those things. And it's little drips that take away our foundation. And Solomon and Jesus are saying, we could gain the world, we could get to the top, but if we're sacrificing these little things, then the top isn't going to matter. It's how we get there. It's the things that we do along the way. Here's one of my favorites. That's not porn. That's art. It's art. I'm just enjoying the beauty of God's creation. Whatever. There it goes again. We call these things... we call this art, and it's stuff that is not pleasing to God, and we make excuses, and it's a little drip. It's a little bit here. And whether it's, you know, I don't know, Playboy, or whether it's the swimsuit edition, come on, it comes out every year. It's part of sports, right? And it's a little drip. It's a little drip. And suddenly, these drips add up, and we're standing in a hole, and we can't get out, and we wonder how we got there. And it's because of these little sacrifices of integrity, these little things that we gain the world, but we start to lose our soul. We lose who we are. We become successful. We become a great king, but are unable to take advice or follow anything that people tell us to do. Our success is not measured by where you are, but how you get there. That's the issue. And that's what God's calling us to do. And I want you to understand something. If you guys could just look at me for a second. I know I'm a pastor, and right away that gives me like a stigma. Somehow you think that I'm holier than you or more spiritual than you. And I am, because I'm awesome. No. but I'm just a regular person. And I don't come to you because I've got integrity wrapped up, because I'm perfect. I don't come to you any week, and I hope you don't miss that. I hope you don't think, oh, well, he's got it under control, and that's why he's teaching it, and so I really can't be like him, so I can ignore it. And I hope that's not what's happening, because I am no different than you guys. And I struggle with these things all the time. But the reason I'm teaching it, and the reason I teach anything from God's Word, is because it's from God's Word. It's God's standard. It's not mine. Don't try to live up to my standard or impress me. Don't try to make me happy, but do it because this is what God has called us to do. And the hard thing about God's word is that this is hard. You're going to read in your prime groups this week, you're going to look at some verses, and there's a lot of things that say, do not even a hint, have nothing to do with them. And there's these different things that we call white lies. They're no biggies. And God says, no, none, nothing. And that's hard because it doesn't give us much room to kind of do our thing and work our way. But it's what God has called us to do, and God's, what God has given us, His Word, is what's best for us. And so I don't want you to miss that. I pray that each week you don't hear some guy up here because, oh, he's got it together and I can never be like him. I mean, shave your head, grow a goatee, and you're done. You know, there you go. That's the best you can do. But miss it, what God's calling us. And here's a verse in Philippians that I just kind of really solidifies kind of where I am. And this is what Paul was. I mean, he wrote a good portion of the New Testament. He said, not that I've already obtained all of this, or I have already arrived at my goal. He says, I haven't gotten there yet, but I press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus took hold of me. And he goes on and says, brothers and sisters, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it, but one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining towards what is ahead, I press on toward the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. Jesus died for you. Your past is forgiven. And we can move forward today. And we don't have to say, oh, wow, this is such a big deal. They're little things. They're little drips. And so we're going to take a moment right now, just between you and God. So prayer is just talking to God. You don't have to talk out loud. And, you know, look at your life. What are your little drips? I mean, I shared some, but there's probably many more things. And there's probably something right now that is hanging out back here, and you're like, I want to ignore that. I want to ignore that. And that is probably God speaking to you saying, you need to fix that. You need to fix that. Because Solomon said, I've gotten to the top, and I realized that I got to this point and was no longer willing to be a man of integrity, to be a person of integrity, because I need to maintain my success. You can gain the whole world and lose your soul. So right now, just in this moment of quiet, and then I'll close in prayer, but just between you and God, what is it that you need to deal with? What is it that you need to work out? What is the thing that is happening in your life, the little drips that are eroding your foundation, and we're letting it go? Father, as we reflect on our lives, I know for me, it's probably not one or two areas. There's tons of things that I just allow my integrity to slip away. And I pray for this moment right now that as you've been bringing things to our mind, to our hearts, that we need to change. God, help us to fight against the idea, I guess, that these are just little things, that they're no big deal. And even reflecting on the fact that that was the exact same tactic that Satan used in the Garden of Eden. Did God really say that? And right now, that's what we're thinking. Is that really that big of a deal? And I just pray that you would help us in a way that you can, way more than any person, that you would help us to adjust our lives, to get rid of these things that may seem little, but they're attacking our integrity, that we're gaining the whole world, we're gaining a lot of things, but we're forfeiting our soul. Help us to realize those things and to make the changes that we need to. We thank you for today. Thank you for what this week is going to be in terms of nice weather and all of those. And God, I just pray that you would haunt us, though, in the midst of all that, haunt us with the things that we need to change so that we don't find out that we're in the middle of a hole that has been dug because of our little rivets, our little drips that caused some big problems. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.